Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast presented to you by Underdog Fantasy. I am Vlad Sedler at RotoGut, joined as always by Boom62 on Twitter, Jason Anthony. Jason, what's up, man? How about that football game?
What up, Vlad? Recording a little bit later than normal. I could not get myself unglued from that game. Talk about a sports overload right now. I'm just in sports heaven. Football drafts, finishing the baseball season, opening day of football, trying to make some money. I'm having a great time.
Yeah, we're in this little period of time here in September now. We got three more fab periods, 1 month of the season to go, lots of league titles that are going to be up for grabs here. So we really got to kind of grind it through. And here to join us and to help us grind through these last few weeks is a very special guest. He is a host, producer, an analyst, a writer at Fantasy Pros. He's been at many different sites in the past. He's the host of the 90 Feet From Home podcast. It's a solo pod. Occasionally he has guests, but he grinds on that 5 days a week during the baseball season. And in my opinion, this man has incredibly exploded on the fantasy baseball scene in the past year. I don't want to say rookie of the year because he's been around for a few years, but definitely somebody on them streets. His daily baseball threads are absolute fire, chock full of great information, and always a must read. He's a rising star, very good fantasy manager, and someone I am proud to call my protege, at Joe Orico 99. Ladies and gentlemen, Joe Orico. Joe, what's up, buddy?
It's funny how we've come this far from just a lunch date at Chick-fil-A in Arizona a couple years ago, Vlad. But yeah, proud to call you a good friend. You have been a mentor to me over the last couple of years, so it's really great to come on to your show. Jason, we're meeting for the first time tonight, but a big fan of everything that you do as well. You've been a great voice on the FTN show this year, so it's really great to meet you and to talk baseball with you guys tonight.
We're excited.
Yeah, dude. It's funny. That is how we met. Not in a Chick-fil-A, but we were at First Pitch Arizona. It was 2022, and we just got into town, a bunch of us. It was, that Thursday, and I was looking to grab some lunch, and Joe's like, I'm hungry. I'll go. Let's roll. So I said, great. There's not a lot of things around here. There's a Chick-fil-A down the street. He goes, Chick-fil-A? Oh, I've always wanted to try that place. I'm like, what? You've never been to Chick-fil-A? And we went there, and I just remember your face. You're like, oh, my God, this is really good.
Yeah. So Rob Silver the night before had, I told him, I'll have whatever you're having. And this guy was drinking like double Jack Daniels or something. So I woke up feeling not too great. I needed to soak that up in the morning. I met you in the lobby. And then, yeah, the Chick-fil-A, like I'm in Toronto and they're very hard to find in Toronto. On the outskirts in the suburb cities around Toronto, you can find them all over the place. But I have to drive at least like half an hour, 40 minutes if I want to like Uber Eats it or something. It's going to be an hour, so I just don't really get it that often. But whenever I walk into a Chick-fil-A, Vlad, I always think of that time when we were out there in the desert.
Come for the baseball information, stay for the Chick-fil-A.
Exactly.
Sorry, I had a freeze there. So Joe, we really appreciate you coming on. We're gonna have a fun little show here today. We're going to get into some of a little bit on fantasy strategy. We're going to talk some random topics here, some MLB, some fantasy as well. First thing, just talking a little bit about you. You mentioned you're from Toronto. I know that you are a big Blue Jays fan. And just as far as like now being a fantasy player and an analyst, like how do you manage the fandom and the ability to stay unbiased with your Blue Jays when it comes to fantasy and setting targets?
If anything, when I'm going to recommend a Blue Jays player or I see that a Blue Jays player is doing well, I almost have like another level that I need to clear to recommend a Blue Jay. I have to go through that own process in my head to say, hold on a second. Do I like him because I watch him every single day, or is there actually a reason to be interested in this player? So that's definitely been something I had to adjust growing up. As we all know, you're a fan of players in your city. You're a fan of the whole team, really. But when you're doing fantasy analysis, you can't just say, this guy's great, this guy's great, this guy's great. Obviously, you got to break it down a little further. And sometimes the biases do get in the way. David Schneider was definitely one of them for me earlier in the year. I saw those massive barrel rates and he hit the ground running 900 OPS through his first like 80 games. And I was thinking, this guy might be an all-star. Like, what's the level here? And then I had a couple of Toronto people talk to me and they're like, he's probably not going to be an all-star. Like, you need to kind of reassess that. So every now and then you kind of need to take a step back and make sure those biases aren't at play. But it just comes down to really just going through all those fan graphs and Baseball Savant and pitcher list pages and just making sure you're really staying up on top of all of it, so you're not saying something that's just based on your fandom as opposed to the actual analysis.
Yeah, I kind of do a same thing with the Dodgers, because I know many times people are like, oh, well, you know, you're like biased towards your team. Well, first of all, I'm a Dodger fan, and it happens to be a good time. I mean, usually it is a good time with fantasy to be a Dodger fan. Of course, the pitching staff, not so much this season, but the hitters, where you had the three guys in the first round. You know, just the chances of them all staying healthy and returning first round value was very slim. But either way, that you're exactly right. You almost have to have that additional layer of analysis, a barrier of sorts. And it's easier to do when you have that sort of hometown access. You watch them more, you're more familiar, and you see things from, you know, not a negative lens per se, but like a realistic one. So I think that's pretty important. I'm sure the same with Jay and his Bay Area squads.
But is there anything better than your guy you're a fan of just killing it in fantasy? Like, I know for me the last month it was, I called him Troy Tulowitzki, but it was Tyler Fitzgerald. You know, you kind of look past that 32% strikeout rate and think he's going to be a star, but you know, everything comes to reality, we'll call it. But when it's hot, it's hot. And I know as a fan, it's more fun like that. And you kind of look past the flaws. But it, like Joe said, it's really important to really dive into the stats and leave the emotion out of it.
Yeah, I completely agree. If you are a fan and you are a diehard and you're trying to do this, it usually doesn't work out so well if you aren't checking yourself on a regular basis. Like, I've kind of taken a step back a little bit. Maybe part of that is because the Blue Jays just suck the last couple of years, but I also don't really, I don't know exactly the right way to put it, but I don't try and use that fandom in my analysis really at all. They're just another team. They're just another team. They might as well be the Athletics or the White Sox as far as I'm going to favor them as opposed to anybody else.
By the way, we were talking before the show. We mentioned that Parker Meadows, we're recording on Thursday, September the 6th, and the Parker Meadows grand slam there to end the game. And just thinking about how he had that helium towards the end of last draft season. And then, as is the case, that, you know, those waves, that, you know, the arc of a player completely flamed out in the first month, got hurt, started getting hot in the minors. We were tracking it. He was doing well. And now he's come up and has performed really well. And obviously that will have a positive impact on his fantasy squad. I'm sorry, his ADP this upcoming season. But that Tigers team is the offense specifically, in addition to the pitching staff, the offense is sneakily interesting for fantasy. All these guys like, you know, Jace and Torkelson and Meadows, Curry Carpenter. So it's an interesting squad. We'll see where they fall in.
Don't leave Riley Green out. Stud, well, he is.
Without a doubt. The stud.
Yeah, no, they're... I said it before we started going, but I think there's a chance that they could be the Royals of 2025, that they could take that step forward if we see enough progression in the offense. I think they're probably in need of another pitcher to come in there somewhere. Even if Jackson Jobe's looking like we are expecting him to look next season, they're probably in need of another arm. But I feel like this team is just a couple of small pieces away from really being able to make some noise, especially considering the weakness of their division.
You mean like a Jack Flaherty, perhaps?
Oh, that would be fantastic. Where would they get one of those?
Yeah.
Or maybe a Javi Baez, Vlad.
Or a Javi. I think he's done. I mean, I think he's, you know, pretty close to retirement. He's gonna be one of those guys that just like falls to the wayside and definitely will not be drafted, probably not even DCs, and just, you know, kind of disappear into the sunset.
His contract is not, unfortunately.
I was gonna say he'll be like a Patrick Corbin. He'll stick around and get paid, but you're not gonna get much production out of him.
Yeah.
Although I shouldn't be slandering Corbin after what he's been doing the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's funny how that works. Like, and this week specifically felt like a little trappy, right? Because you get a few, we've been here before. He's been the worst pitcher in baseball for the last four seasons. You get a bunch of good starts, and then you're like, okay, well, let's pick him up. He's got a nice two-step on paper. And then usually what ensues is disaster. in the case of Corbin, that first start went well. He's didn't get the win, unfortunately. He's going to get another one this weekend. So, but that's the fun of, I guess, September, right? Like you're just, you know, grinding out every single little, you know, all these bums.
What I said on my show the other day in regards to Corbin is that if I'm going to lose the whole fantasy season after 6 months of moves, it's not going to be at the hands of Patrick Corbin. I'm going to go a different route. And if he does well, he does well, but it'll be on somebody else's team.
100%. A couple of things I wanted to ask you about is, like, as far as, you know, the way that you have, it's not like an intentional marketing. You're just working hard. You're out there posting very informative threads on Twitter on a daily basis. You're interacting, you know, gracefully with the community and have really built yourself quite a following. And what's cool is that, I mean, you've just been going all season. And I know you and I talked a few weeks ago and just like that grind. And especially, I couldn't imagine doing a podcast every single day. And on top of that, you know, all the writing, producing you're doing, and then putting out, you know, these long threads every day. But hey, the other good thing I wanted to mention is you've really, I think helped open up to the, you know, like the non-high stakes market, right? There are a lot of people out there that love fantasy baseball. They're serious about it. They don't aren't necessarily, you know, not everyone can afford to spend thousands of dollars on fantasy baseball. And these are people who play on Yahoo, Dynasty Keeper League folks, and you really connect with them. And so I think that's really good. So, you know, talk a little bit about that grind and what the season's been like for you.
Well, yeah, I appreciate that. The notes have gone by the wayside the last couple of weeks, and it's mostly been because I work at Fantasy Pros, and with the football season coming up as it is, it's just been very busy, as you might imagine, for a company that does just so many podcasts and stuff. I'm a podcast producer over there. That's mainly what I do. So it's just been very hard in the evenings to write. So I've been able to do that as much the last couple of weeks. And I feel like I am kind of letting people down to some extent, but there's just not enough hours in the day. There really aren't. I wish there was, you know, an extra 5 or 6 hours a day, I'd be able to get it done. But in terms of the content and gearing it more towards the shallow league players, I think it's because when I first came into the content game, end of 2021, beginning of 2022, I was just seeing a lot of things that were not familiar to me. As a consumer and as somebody who was starting to make content, I was seeing terms like main event and overall championship and things like that, where the average player is saying, what even is this? And I was that person. I thought the main event a couple of years ago was just your biggest league, your favorite league or whatever. I came into the industry with a level of ignorance that would surprise a lot of people. But I think the reason why I stick with the shallower league content, the Yahoo, the ESPN, the CBS leagues, is because that's where the majority of my followers come from, and podcast listeners, that's where they come from. So like just looking at today on Yahoo, Joey Estes was added in 10,000 leagues for his start against the Mariners. 10,000 ads in one day for an Athletics pitcher. It's just a huge market of people playing on those sites. Even into September, you're seeing those kind of numbers. So I feel like it's just, for me, that's where the majority of people are playing. I came from playing on Yahoo, so it's the site where I had the most familiarity. That being said, I did 16 leagues this year, and 15 of them were on the NFBC. So that's kind of what happens once you start making content for a couple of years. And you give it 5 years, I probably won't mention Yahoo anymore, because that's kind of just what happens. But I really do want to cater more so to the fantasy everyman than the people who are spending, you know, five figures on fantasy, because the reality is that's just a very small minority of the fan base. Now, I don't want people to think that I hate on the high stakes content or anything. I listen to this show every week. I absorb high stakes content. Vlad, I read your Fab article top to bottom every single Saturday. But I feel like the majority of fantasy players are just playing in a $50, 10 or 12 teamer, and I try and gear my work more towards them.
Yeah, I mean, that's how most of us started, and a lot of us are still continuing. Yeah, that Yahoo space especially, I think it's the breeding ground for fantasy players, and that's nowhere where I started. You know, you mentioned some of the NFBC, Joe. What did you do this year with the NFBC, and what are your plans moving forward?
So 16 teams, there was a mix of draft champions. I start right early as I can in Arizona at First Pitch Arizona. I do a draft there, which I've done pretty well in the last couple seasons. I do a couple of gladiators. I do the Earth League, which is the Canadian Roto Fantasy League, which we do in Toronto here. TGFBI. I did a couple of listener leagues, just kind of feeling out a bunch of different types of styles of games, 12 teamers, 15 teamers. I want to get more into the best balls. I think that's something that I'm going to do a little bit more as I go on. But more so these first couple of years for me, I've just been kind of learning the playing field, getting used to the FAB system. I've always, most of the time, just played with either a standard waiver system or a $100 FAB on Yahoo, which is just a completely different beast than what the NFBC offers. So it's kind of just been an adjustment period, and I feel like over the next couple of years, I'll start to ramp up the high stakes. But for now, and probably even for next year, it's still just an information gathering exercise.
You know, what's really kind of mind opening is the fact that you mentioned that there were 10,000 Joe Estes ads in Yahoo. That, I mean, we know the numbers of people that are playing, but like 3 weeks away from the end of the season. I mean, these are the playoffs. People are in the playoffs. They're making their moves. That makes sense. But that's just like, it is really eye-opening. And I think that is I wouldn't say an issue, but it is something that when the people in our little high stakes, mid stakes universe, we get sort of comfortable, or just some people don't realize, like, I mean, everybody is a part of this. We're all fantasy baseball players. We're all at different stages, you know, in our lives. We still sometimes live in this like little Twitter bubble, and we just need to appreciate. I mean, these are the people that we want to be future main event people, as you know, they get out of college, get older, make money, and they like fantasy baseball. We want them to join and play against us. So for me, you know, I don't really get it when you've got kind of people doing some of the gatekeeping, or just, you know, kind of, you know, when you meet everyone in NFBC and main event, like, you see these are all phenomenal, fantastic people, maybe not always matching the personalities that you're seeing on Twitter. But I do wish there was a little bit more of that, because Jason, I try to be as inclusive as possible.
And that's for the best, right? Like, I know that not everybody's in this to grow the game or whatever, and that's totally fine. A lot of people are just in it to play their, you know, put their entry fees in, play their game, and be done with it at the end of the season. But I feel like, especially as my profile has grown more and more, I feel like there is somewhat of a responsibility there to bring more people into the game and make it as accessible as possible. And that's what I try and do. I won't always be as accessible as I maybe want to be. Like, throughout the entire offseason, I'm going to mention NFBC ADP because it's the only one, and it's also the best. Like, even if there were other ones, I would still reference it. But as soon as we go to in season, that's when I start to focus more on the daily pickups, the Yahoo and the CBS, et cetera, et cetera. So there's definitely a balance. I couldn't just focus on one or the other. I think I kind of need to mix it up in all the groups. And then that way I feel like I can, maybe an NFBC player can listen to my show, and then a guy who's playing in a free 10-team league with his buddies can also listen, and hopefully both of them can get something out of it.
Yeah, I know Vlad and I have kind of hammered this point home earlier in the season before draft season, but anybody listening about, you know, fantasy baseball with this podcast, Joe's followers, Vlad's followers, my four followers, you know, my favorite thing is the friendships I've made in this community. You know, everybody thinks, oh, it's this much money or this much. I'm not going to fit in. But I have made so many friends, and I started going just one league in Vegas and not knowing a soul, and walking around and seeing, I think it was Vlad, Rob Silver, Matt Modica, and Scott Ginstead walking around. I was like, man, those, I want to hang out with those guys. And now I'm good friends with all of them. So everybody's so nice. And, you know, if anybody has a chance to go to Vegas, even if it's for a $350 OC, I cannot recommend it enough. It is just, you know, the best weekend of the year, in my opinion.
Joe, talk to me about some of your preseason calls. You know, we all have them. I know you're very steadfast in your opinions. I think, you know, like Jason and I, you also are able to keep yourself in check. And when something in your process doesn't look like it's going in the right direction, or, you know, player analysis, you're able to kind of take a step back and look at it and reassess for the next season. Let's just from like a macro perspective, are there any sort of major lessons that you've learned from playing fantasy baseball this year that you feel you would apply for next season?
The thing with the game that we're playing is there's so many changing variables every single season. It's really hard for me to say there's anything concrete I can take from this year and put it into next year. With the way that they're changing the ball and the way that pitchers are getting injured at this rate, it's hard for me to say that there's anything I can really take. Like, I thought the stolen base trends would continue to some extent. They haven't really. Like, there have been certain players that I thought would go for 40, 50 bases, and they're more in the 20 to 30 range, and they kind of came back down to earth. So I was thinking after last season that, okay, now we can just kind of adjust and expect an extra, whatever, 15, 20, 25% stolen bases, but that didn't really happen. I feel like until the league actually just stops messing with things, like now we have a couple, maybe a month ago, that proposal for a minimum of 6 innings for starting pitchers. I don't know what the game is going to look like 6 months from now, so it's hard for me to say certainly if there's things I want to take. But one thing that I do want to start doing more going forward is to take those chances on guys who maybe aren't quite as established. 2 years ago, I faded Bobby Witt. This past season, I faded Ellie and I faded Gunnar Henderson, and I felt pretty stupid about it. And a lot of it was because they don't have a track record. So I feel like if there's anything for me, we've seen these young guys with no track record come up and have a lot of success. Some rookies have failed, of course, but then you also have the Jackson Chourios and the James Woods of the world and Jackson Merrills. So I feel like I'm going to be a little more willing to use a second, third, fourth round price on somebody who doesn't have such a track record, because we have seen some serious examples of success over the last couple seasons with some failures mixed in, but that's kind of just the nature of the beast.
Yeah. It doesn't matter how much homework we do. We're still going to miss on a lot of guys.
Yeah.
You know, one thing you brought up about the changing landscape, and you mentioned stolen bases, something I wanted to share a thought that, you know, kind of crossed my mind. You know, we look at so much with manager trends and team stolen bases. I've come to kind of figure out, and maybe it's just my own feelings, is I don't think it's as much manager as it is front office. You look at the Giants, who I've watched, you know, a lot of, you think Bob Melvin come in there, they were going to run a lot. They have run as much or maybe less than they did with Gabe Kapler. And that's front office driven. These managers, a lot of them, I don't want to say it, but a lot of them are puppets. They're just doing what they're told, and it's analytics and things like that. So I really missed the mark on Bob Melvin, especially with the Giants. I thought they were going to run quite a bit under his managerial style, but it didn't happen. So I just wanted to share that. Another question for you, Joe. A couple players you were high on before the season that kind of has disappointed.
This perfectly ties into what you were just saying, because before the season, I'm not sure if I'll do it again next year because it was a hell of a process, but I did handmade projections, top 35 or so at each position, top 100 starting pitchers, and my top second base stolen base projection was Tyro Estrada. I thought Tyro was going to run wild. I thought we'd see 20, I think I projected 28 steals from him. So that was definitely a loss coming into the season. I had drafted him absolutely everywhere. In terms of my wins, I got to tap Vlad for one of the biggest ones where I drafted everywhere. It was Garrett Crochet. I think it was, I'm not sure if it was the VDP Vlad or if it was something that you wrote, but I saw that you'd ranked him pretty aggressively. And I went and started digging in. The numbers were pretty impressive. And at that point in time, I was thinking, okay, maybe I get the closer for the White Sox, probably 20, 25 saves, nothing crazy. But for where you were drafting him, you didn't expect anything crazy. But that one was like, I think I had about 50% Garrett Crochet. So that one was definitely due to Vlad. I have to give you credit for that one. Christopher Sanchez and Jack Flaherty were two of my huge wins, specifically Sanchez. I was in on all throughout draft season. Flaherty, I was going back and looking at my notes before this show, and after his second spring training start, I was fully in on him. I forget exactly what it was in that start, but there was something there, and I was okay. Yeah, like if you're seeing him available, if you can draft him with your last couple picks, then go ahead and do it. So those were the big pitcher wins. There was a kind of a niche position player that I drafted all over the place. I didn't expect it to be a big win, but Connor Wong ended up being a huge win in two catcher leagues. My thought process was, okay, I got a couple steals, probably regular playing time from a catcher, but he's done a lot more than I would have expected. So that's another big win. On the loss side, it's Tyro. It's a big one. Tim Anderson. Can't even believe that when looking at the player shares page tonight, I forgot because it was so many draft champions leagues where I have Tim Anderson shares thinking he was going to start every day in Miami. And then Jorge Polanco was also a really, really bad one. I drafted a lot of him in Minnesota. Once he got traded to Seattle, that obviously changed the outlook ballpark wise for sure, but he just cratered this year. So a bit of a mixed bag, but some really nice wins to hang my hat on this year.
Yeah. I was just, when you were talking about that, I was looking back at my player shares page, and you know, it's funny. I do look at it from once in a while, because I felt very confident about it, and I will win some leagues, and you know, maybe even make some noise in some overall competitions. But I'm not having that truly dominant season, like, you know, kind of like that I was expecting. And man, it's just give me a full season, Tyler O'Neill, please. Just, can you just, bro, can you just stay healthy for a full season? But like, you know, all the Ronaldo Lopez and Garrett Crochet, I mean, kind of digging those guys out through my process and still buying in, and towards, you know, in the early part of draft season, the mid at the end, it felt really good to see, you know, see how they performed all season. Even when the times were bad for Crochet and it was expected, it was something already built into the equation. You cannot hate on that because he already provided you. He led the league in strikeouts up until that point when they kind of shut things down. And from a guy that hadn't pitched the previous season, who anyone who was drafting him at the time in February was doing so because maybe he might be the closer on a team that wasn't very good. We didn't think they would be that bad. But just, you know, it's the little ones that really hit, because those are the ones you can get more shares of. Those are more, you know, quote unquote, your guys, like the Jose Caballeros of the world, like, you know, Ronaldo Lopez, as ones that didn't work out, like, you know, Jordan Hicks, though he maybe did for, you know, a month and a half or so, or, you know, Jacob Junis, I've got on a whole bunch of teams, mostly draft champions, didn't really pan out. But it's those later round guys that really make you feel good and kind of coming back for more.
Oscar Colas is another one. I'm just going through the player shares pages. I thought that he would get a lot of playing time in Chicago. I got about 40% Oscar Colas this year. That's another one.
I forgot he existed.
Yeah, so did the White Sox.
can we circle back to a full season Tyler O'Neill? Is that like saying a cheap layer? I don't think that exists, Vlad. I think it is what it is, and he's been good for where you got him. So I would kind of take your win there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. We'll take the win. We got a few things to talk about here in a second. A lot of Yankees topics here. But first, a quick message from our sponsor. The NFL season is back. Real games start on Sunday, and what better way to celebrate than with Underdog Fantasy? Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. It's also the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Underdog is now offering new customer FTN specials with up to $1,000 on your first time deposit. The Underdog app is so easy to use, and weekly contests such as the onside kick, the double doink, and the two-minute drill are back. Head over to Underdog for a deposit match up to $1,000 when you sign up with the code FTN. That's up to $1,000 extra. NFL season is here, and who better to celebrate with than Underdog Fantasy? All right, we're back here. Vlad Sedler with Jason Anthony, our special guest, Joe Orico of Fantasy Pros. All right, let's talk some Yankees here. Is this long overdue? Clay Holmes it's kind of intriguing, the non-committal of Aaron Boone, even though we kind of know exactly what he's saying. But talk about Clay Holmes for a minute and how you see things transpiring with saves with the Yankees for the remainder of the season.
I think they probably give him maybe a week and a half out of high leverage. And then heading into the playoffs, I feel like they'll probably want to get him back into that role, but it is a tricky one for sure. I just feel like given his track record over the last couple of seasons, they'll want to go with him in the playoffs over somebody who doesn't have any experience, the Jake Cousins, the Tommy Conleys, the Luke Weavers. First of all, for a fantasy point of view, I just think you'd stick with Holmes if you got him. Either you cut Holmes and move on altogether, but I don't think speculating on these guys is really going to make a lot of sense. You're going to waste your remaining fab trying to get maybe one or two Yankee saves. I feel like you just hold on to Holmes and hope that he gets that job back, hope that he's able to kind of right the ship a little bit. It hasn't been a disastrous season for him. It hasn't been a Camilo Doval, David Bednar type of season. He still has a 3.27 ERA, 29 saves. The blown saves are definitely a problem. But I think when you're looking at that whole pen, he's probably the one, if you had to hold a gun to Aaron Boone and say, who do you want closing in October? He's probably the one that he would go to.
Yeah. That's interesting tying into the next topic. Does it not make complete sense to have Luis Gil close for them at some point? They have too many starters, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, with Gil and Schmidt both coming back. And they need to limit his innings. Talk about an electric arm in the ninth inning. Only issue is he walks too many guys and your closer really can't do that. But man, it makes a lot of sense to me. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
I was talking earlier tonight with Yankee fan Chris Torres on his show on the Fantasy Baseball Beat. He made the exact same point. He said, why doesn't Luis Gil just get this job for a little while? He's already kind of at his innings limit. You're playing with fire a little bit if you kind of put him back into a starter's role. I think that makes a lot of sense. You like that, Vlad?
You know, I wouldn't mind it, except for the fact that I kind of dropped most of my heel shares. So I did what I thought was an accurate bid in, I think, the first or second week, or it was maybe before the season started, like that first fab. And I ended up what I thought looked like an overbid, where, you know, I recommended people spend between 30 to 60. I spent between 30 to 60, and the backup bids were like way low, like low teens or whatever. I'm like, oh man. But as someone like Scott Jensad, who, a friend of ours, who recently pointed out that my football Samaje Perine overbid isn't really an overbid if he performs, that was the case with Heal. So I could have spent 130. It doesn't really matter. Of course, you want to kind of, you know, be closer, but it doesn't matter. He produced phenomenally for the full season. So selfishly, I want to see Tommy Conley in there, to be honest. And the reason for that is because I have a lot of DC teams that have lost a lot of closers and need some saves. Conley is, I guess, considered in the mix. He's kind of more of a setup man. He, you know, pretty much missed, you know, he's spent a lot of time with injury. Did he have Tommy John? Like 2021. Yeah, he missed all of 2021. Hopped on with the Dodgers for a little bit, and then he's been with the Yankees the last couple of years. But dude's been electric, maybe a little bit high. You know, walk rate for a closer, 10-11% isn't all that crazy these days. Velocity is down a little bit from the previous season, but the swinging strike rate is still banging. I think it's like 14-15%. And yeah, man, I would, you know, ratios are good. I would love to see Conley in there. But I don't know. We'll see.
I think it would potentially make sense. I think if they're going to go with a guy who does have a bit of a command issue, then I would prefer it to be Luis Heal, but I could see them doing a number of different things. That's why I would say it's probably just best to hold on to Holmes. If you drop him, you pick up Conley 1 week, and then they give the save to Cousins. You pick up Cousins, you pick up Weaver the next week after, then what are we doing? I hate that personally. I just hate speculating on these random guys for maybe one or two saves. I'd rather just prioritize the money elsewhere. And if I lose a point or two in saves, I'd rather go about it that way. Is that wrong of me? Is that wrong of me to just ignore a lot of those committees a lot of the time?
I wouldn't say it's wrong of you, but I mean, there's a flip side to the question. Like, you know, I agree with you with hanging on the Holmes because he'll probably get the job back, but what do we have, 3 weeks left? I mean, how long is there to this to pay off? I mean, that roster spot becomes so valuable. What does he get the closer job the last week and get you one save when he's clogging your roster for the last 3 weeks?
Drop him and pick up somebody completely different, not a Yankee maybe.
Yeah. I mean, at this point in the season, for me, it's Cutthroat Carl. If there's anybody, like, you know, Vlad said he dropped Luis Heal. It was a good drop. There was no signs that he was coming back into the rotation. So, you know, I think that's a real good learning lesson that I can pass on is, you know, this late in the season, hoping somebody gets their job back or is coming back from injury, like Clark Schmidt, like I'm excited for him, but pitchers historically coming back from injury do not pitch deep into games. They're only pitching 3-4 innings, 65 to 70 pitches. By the time he's usable, what are you getting out of him? One start, two starts? So you got to be careful with that.
What's really interesting is how a lot of the kind of top teams in baseball have had this instability in closers. Let's just give a second of props to a legit AL Cy Young candidate. Of course, Tarik Skubal is going to win it, but Emmanuel Clase, if you look how he has just dominated the closer position over the last 3 years, like leading in saves by like 25% more than the next guy, who I believe is Josh Hader, just over the last 3 years of just total saves, then the ratios that go along with it. And it makes up for the fact that he isn't like, you know, a 35% strikeout rate guy. And then you look at any player rater on Rasball, Fangraphs, like the difference between him and the next closer is just insane. What he's been doing is incredible, just so stable, always getting the opportunities, always getting 40 saves a year. So he's the easy number one closer next year. But you think about these other situations. You had Evan Phillips, who had been the lowest ratio reliever over the last two seasons, like literally Mr. Dependable, not be dependable this year. You had Baltimore, although we knew that was going to be shaky going in. Now it's just crazy. You can't predict this stuff. I mean, you can predict the Craig Kimball falling apart part, but you couldn't predict like them trading for Sir Anthony Dominguez and him becoming the closer there. It's like, it's crazy stuff. Now you got the Clay Holmes thing. So just a moment of appreciation, I guess, for Clase and what he's doing.
his season statistically is better than Eric Gagne's Cy Young season. So, I mean, if Scooble, or maybe if it was a weak AL year, there's a chance he could sneak in. But Scooble, yeah. I think he's like minus 7,000 or 6,000 in the books. I think it's kind of a foregone conclusion that it's his award to win at this point. Although I'll say Paul Skeens was minus 5,000 for Rookie of the Year a couple weeks ago, and now he's plus 900. So I guess you can't really go off of the betting markets. But I think it is Tariq Skubal's award to lose at this point.
A couple of other things, more selfish questions. And so I apologize if you people do not have him these guys stashed, but I am fighting for some stuff in main events and super auction. And I've got Jason Dominguez stashed and I've got Jackson Jobe stashed. Is there any chance at this point? So Dominguez was denied the September call up. They called up like Drew Ellis. And obviously there are reasons for it, and financially and rookie of the year, and, you know, rookie status next year, it all makes sense. But will he even be up this year? I mean, because he would be a fantasy boon. Like, what he's doing over there is ridiculous. We know most likely what he's going to do if he gets to the majors. So how do you feel about him and Jobe? Are either of them up?
When you have a chance to play Alex Verdugo, you got to play Alex Verdugo, right? I mean, that's what any sane person would do. I don't understand it. I just think they've kind of shown their hand this year. If Dominguez is going to come up, maybe we get a week out of him or so, and maybe you sneak him into a lineup. But what do we got, 20 games left in the season? They need to do it ASAP for him to have really any impact. He's got to come up, hit the ground running right away. We're kind of pushing up against Father Time here. I don't know if there's really going to be so much of an impact this year, but next season I think Dominguez, there's no reason for Verdugo to be back there blocking him. If he is, that would just be fully insane at that point. So I think next year is when Dominguez is really going to hit a stride, but I just can't see it this year. He would have been up by now, I would imagine, if they were going to do it, right? Probably.
Yeah, I stashed Jason Dominguez in my ultimate for almost all season. I got him in like the third week and thought he was going to be useful. Held on, and I finally dropped him this last week when they didn't get called up. So unless there's an injury in the next couple weeks, or you might see him the last week when the AAA season finishes, but they're not going to call him up to sit him on the bench, and Aaron Boone's not going to play him. It's just simple as that. So I think might be a wasted roster spot, but if he does get called up, Vlad, it could be huge. So I didn't want to be completely negative on it. And as far as Jackson Jobe goes, I don't see it. They really don't have any reason to bring him up. They'll probably shut him down before bringing him up, in my opinion.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I just worry about that walk rate. We're talking about like a 13% walk rate at AA. The results have been very good, but that, I know it's just one metric. You shouldn't focus in on something that's just one number, but that does worry me, especially making a jump, skipping over AAA. Again, another guy who'd have to hit the ground running to really make an impact this season. I just think it's a small chance personally, but anything can happen. You never know.
You know, my gut was almost incredibly on point, and people would have called me Gutstradamus for sure. But a week and a half ago, on a Sunday night, I was talking about Jason Dominguez and how not hopefully, but you never wish injury upon people. But I said, you know, hey, if Alex Verdugo, you know, probably will, you know, sprain his ankle playing Dance Dance USA or whatever, and so they can call up Jason Dominguez tomorrow. And then all of a sudden I get a tweet. Holy crap, Vlad. And apparently like Alex Verdugo in the Monday game, like ran into a wall. It's like, dude, you're crazy. But he ended up being fine. It didn't happen or whatever. But I definitely don't want to have kind of powers to hurt people, because, you know, I could misuse it for fantasy reasons.
Vlad, I'm not going to speak for Joe, but I will never call you Gutstradamus or whatever you just said.
No, hey, no one does. We're talking about Jacob DeGrom here, returning. He's obviously somebody worth, you know, getting after. Jason and I were talking, was it with Phil or with Posma a couple weeks ago? We were talking about potential value for DeGrom if he does well.
I think
well.
It was with Phil, because we're talking about high velocity guys.
Yeah, so question to you, if he comes back in DeGrom's, as we expect, and even if it's just a couple of starts, where can he fall? I mean, is he going to be up there in that, you know, the second round in the Skeens range, saying his spring training is all, you know, is looking good, everything's back to normal? Is there a chance here?
I'll pass this on to Joe.
My co-host on the Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast, our mutual friend Chris Welsh, thinks I am a lunatic, but I think if DeGrom looks like DeGrom, he's going in the first round. I think he's going to at least sneak in there. The minimum pick will certainly be in the top 15. ADP, probably not every single draft, but all it takes is one person in every room to just think of that upside. I feel like he's probably more so a second rounder, but I think if he looks anything like old DeGrom, even if he's 75-80% of old DeGrom, he's not making it past pick 30 in any room. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to that point, we're going to do a little exercise of next year's first round ADP. I have him in there. You know, and I think I made the argument on that podcast with Phil. DeGrom, as risky as he is, might be safer than Paul Skeens next year because the elbow injuries already happened.
That's fair.
It's a ticking time bomb with the high velocity guys. And I feel more comfortable as a fantasy player drafting a guy coming off the injury than a healthy guy that has never had it.
Yeah,
it's going to be very interesting. And, you know, all the New York fans, you know, I mean, there definitely is a New York bias for like New York drafters who love the Mets or the Yankees. They'll definitely kind of push their, you know, those guys up a little bit. And doesn't matter that he's not a Met anymore. People still love DeGrom, and we just know like kind of what, you know, what the possibilities are with him. And as far as like what the starting pitcher draft pool, like where the top guys are going to fall next season, it's not going to be any different than it has been every other season. Every season we will have the conversation after the year. Oh, don't draft pitchers high. Don't draft pitchers high. By the time DC season starts coming around and, you know, the OC season and all that, you know, all these guys are going to be moving up. You're going to see, you know, like Phil take, you know, Skubal, you know, first overall and stuff like that. It's just, you know, just how it is. That's the nature of the beast.
My question for Jason would be, if you've already got him inside your first round, let's say he looks all the way back, old DeGrom, is he in the 1-1 consideration for you next year?
You know, I'm using this, my projections, as main event ADP, so it's a little different than overall ADP. The pitching does get pushed up even higher. I do not see a scenario where he would go in front of Ohtani, just because the fact Ohtani will be throwing again next year. We don't know in what capacity. But Shohei's, you know, 1A, B, C, D, E before anybody else next year. The guy literally can do whatever he wants on the baseball field. It's the most incredible thing I've ever seen. And, you know, we're all going to look back 30 years from now and just, you know, we did not appreciate what he's doing as much as we should.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I think I've seen or maybe heard some people say that they like Bobby Witt Jr. more. And sure, yeah. You got the pitching element now. And I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, you can make a case. He's just younger, healthier, doesn't have the pitching in the way, doesn't clog up the utility. Yeah, sure. There are absolute reasons why you can go Bobby Witt. And Bobby Witt could even take things to another level. No one, not even me, who projects even on the higher end, like on an 80 percentile probability as opposed to 50 in most cases. Even I wasn't close. Like Witt is putting up some crazy numbers this season, especially the batting average, right? Like nobody's predicted the dude to be hitting like 350. It's just absolutely insane. But we'll talk about these guys here in a bit. Just a couple more questions for you. Well, actually one about Ohtani. You got Lindor gaining steam, at least on Twitter. I don't know if it in real life. I don't know. Is Twitter real life? I don't know. Lindor, NL MVP. And it's just the fact that, if Ohtani goes 50-50, but the Dodgers like don't win the division, like what can change? Because I'm not really seeing the odds in the books change very much on Ohtani.
Ohtani's minus 2,000 at DraftKings and minus 4,000 at FanDuel. It's, I know we mentioned earlier that the books aren't always 100% accurate, but this feels like a done deal. I have no bias towards either of these players. If anything, I should be a little biased against Ohtani for what happened with Toronto in the offseason, but I don't hold that against him. I'm just looking at a guy who's going to be coming off of an elbow injury, surgery. I don't think we ever really got clarity on what exactly the procedure was. I don't think it was full-blown Tommy John, but he's coming off of a major procedure. He's going to go 50-50 and hit 300. He's the MVP. I'm sorry. He doesn't need to play the field when he's doing that to be considered the MVP. I did a segment on my own show a few weeks ago that was about 20 minutes long about why Francisco Lindor will probably go down as a top 5 or 7 shortstop in the history of baseball. But that being said, Ohtani's going to win unanimously, and I think he should. He's just on a whole other level. The defensive aspect is definitely a part of it, but I wouldn't fault Ohtani because they're not sticking him in right field. Like, that wouldn't really add anything to the value. He's already losing some value if you're looking at WAR equations because he's playing DH. I don't think we need to take anything else away from him because, oh, he's not getting, you know, sticking out in right field there. I think he's, for me, pretty easily the MVP.
And, you know, I'm pretty positive if Ohtani did play right field, he'd win a gold glove. Exactly. I mean, the guy. And the short answer to Vlad's question is no. Next question.
All right. Next question is Royce Lewis. He's got only one home run over the last 3 weeks. He was on that list through his short career, maybe sometime in, I think, May or June. It was like five players with a minimum, you know, X amount of plate appearances, the average home runs per at bat, or, you know, at bats per home run. It was like, you know, Babe Ruth, you know, Aaron Judge, Barry Bonds, and then Royce Lewis. And granted, much smaller sample, but he's really cooled off. And I mean, slashing what, 236, 250, 333 over the last week. And on top of that, all the, you know, consistent injury concerns. Is there a possibility, like, if he, you know, this is baseball and fantasy in a nutshell, like seeing him potentially just kind of quietly not do anything amazing the rest of the season and then add on the injury concerns, and all of a sudden he becomes a great value and then just is healthy for a full year and just explodes. So just, I just wanted to put that out there as something that could potentially happen.
I love him personally. Like, this is just him being human. We'd only seen, like you said, a very small sample size before. So everybody, like you said, he was on list with Babe Ruth. That was just not going to be something that was sustainable. But now we have 130 games under his belt, 33 homers, six stolen bases, and a 288 batting average. That's with a 147 WRC plus, 11.6% barrel rate. Like, he's regressed, and those are what the numbers still look like. He's not a 340 hitter. He was never going to be, but I think he's still an elite player. And if people are going to, you know, kind of be looking at the recent trends and say, okay, Royce Lewis batting 240 over the last month, he's ending cold, the injury concerns, maybe we get a fifth, sixth round Royce Lewis. And if we do, I'm hitting draft every single time. There is an injury concern, of course, but as we've seen this year, I mean, more so on the pitching side, but you can't predict health, right? I mean, you guys are doing football prep right now, and the whole question is, well, should McCaffrey be the number one pick? If he gets hurt, he gets hurt. If anybody gets hurt, they get hurt, right? But I think the talent level, especially if you are getting a dip like that with Lewis, I'll take him every single time. Where do you guys think he's going to go? Is he going to fall to the fifth round, or is that overestimating it?
Yeah. It's going to be tough. Depends if he plays the last 3.5 weeks, stays on the field. You know, this recency bias towards next year's drafts, it's always huge. You know, and the other thing is baseball's hard. It's a 3 week sample stretch. These guys go through struggles. Every single one of them, even Ohtani, has gone through funks for 3 weeks at a time. If Royce Lewis is on the field, he's a monster. And I don't know if I would let him get past round four, to Joe's point. You know, I just pulled up a tweet. I have a lot of Aaron Judge this year. And since he was on the Paw Patrol cartoon, which, you know, I get to watch a lot, and having a 4 and a 2-year-old, he's got 27 at bats, only 5 hits and 13 strikeouts. So, you know, I can't, I'm blaming Paw Patrol and Chase and Rubble for ruining the rest of my fantasy teams.
It's a good show, Joe. You'll get there soon. You'll enjoy it. I don't know whatever the version of Paw Patrol is when
hopefully not too soon.
No. Keep grinding. Keep grinding on the fantasy, man. another quick one is, do you have a Nolan Jones, like somebody that just blows up in September this year? And it doesn't matter if they end up being a bust next season, just as far as like just somebody people should pick up that is kind of off everyone's radar, maybe in 12 teamers, just to keep it more shallow, that could explode in September.
So I kind of went about this in terms of Nolan Jones, like the full-blown Nolan Jones of a guy who gets really hot down the stretch, ends up being a pretty high draft pick. The name that I came across here really was Tyler Fitzgerald. I think he's going to be overdrafted next year and come back down to earth a little bit. I'm sorry, Jason. The other one that kind of fits the criteria, although I've bought in a lot more as of late, is Lawrence Butler. At first, I thought this was pretty unsustainable, but he's got that strikeout rate quite a bit. He's stealing bases. An underrated thing with the A's is that they are not going to be playing in the Coliseum next year. They're going to be playing in a PCL park in Sacramento. So they're going to go from a bad park factor to probably a very good one. So I'm not really sure he fits that criteria anymore. Fitzgerald's the one I'm kind of worried about. Like, I've already seen people say he's a top 100 pick next year. I'll be all the way out. I think that has Nolan Jones written all over it.
Yeah, Yeah. You know, Brent Rooker might hit 70 homers next year in Sacramento. That might be fun. I got two names for you, Vlad, for this year's Nolan Jones. And maybe not a fail for next year, but the first one's Parker Meadows, who you mentioned earlier in the podcast. I think he could have a really hot last 3.5-4 weeks. And the other one just came off the IL, Xavier Edwards. Guy was running crazy before that. He could really, if he continues to run, really fly up the draft boards next year and carry some teams to some titles.
Yeah, those are good ones. There's something special about Lawrence Butler. I mean, you almost don't want him to go to, I mean, he's obviously not going to another team, but again, with the A's, you never know how things shake out. And I don't know the financials and the contract details, but you're right, man. That Sacramento thing, everyone's going to be talking about it. You know, people are going to be pushing the hell out of Zach Gelof and Jacob Wilson and maybe even Max Schumann. So who the heck knows?
Don't you besmirch Jacob Wilson's name.
I like him. I like Jacob Wilson. He'll be good. He just needs to get out from the bottom of the order and we'll figure it out.
I agree. Honestly,
Butler could be really great next year. Just the more I look at it, like the barrel's really good. The 11% swinging strike rate, 50% hard hit. Like, I'm excited to see him in a hitter's park. I really am.
You know what else they're doing is they're starting him and leading him off against lefties, who he traditionally has hit poorly against, because I have an important decision. I have an OC that was 30 points behind first place in the middle of the summer. And now it's me and three other teams in an 85 to 87 point range. So we're all within 2 points of each other. And, you know, don't let me get into September close, man, because I'm going to close that, you know, mother out. But Lawrence Butler, I have like a plethora of outfielders, and sometimes I have to consider those tough decisions. Like if he gets one, you know, two lefties on a weekend, like might sit him. But then, I mean, I think maybe I should have learned my lesson. Like, don't sit Lawrence Butler because he just mashes them in bunches.
He did get cold for a couple weeks there. And I think in shallow leagues, people started to move on and thinking, okay, it's a hot streak for an A's player. What are we going to do here? But I don't know. He's looked a lot more legit. Like earlier in the season, that strikeout rate was closer to 30%. I think everything's just kind of trended in the right direction for him.
All right, let's talk some first round ADP for next season. This is a good time to start talking about it. Joe, I saw you, so you posted something, I think a few weeks ago. And of course these things change quickly, right? Like our list of who we think the first round is this week will be different from next week and the week after. I mean, it's fluid. It's constantly fluid. But I think at the top, looking at both of your lists that you guys sent in early, the top three is pretty much unquestionable. I think it's going to be pretty unanimous for the most part. That we'll see, of course, what can happen between now and then. But it's both your lists have Shohei Ohtani 1, Bobby Witt 2, Aaron Judge 3, and your Witt Judge order, you know, perhaps it could be different. So those are your top three. That's unanimous. I don't know if there's much even to discuss there. The question is the next couple of guys that pop in, because in NFBC and high stakes, Tarik Skubal, maybe Skeens, maybe DeGrom, maybe those guys are in the conversation. That's what, you know, the big money leagues will be doing in your Yahoo and other places. Like, that's not going to be really a thing. Those pitchers will be pushed down. But Ellie De La Cruz, you've got him fifth, Jason. And Joe, you have him fourth. I mean, it's about there. I mean, you don't just steal like 70, 80 bases, be able to, you know, who knows what even the upside is with the home runs. You got that park. I mean, you know, he could be, you know, he could beat out Bobby Witt in a season, right? In any given time.
Yeah, I don't know with Ellie. Like when I first did this a couple of weeks ago, I had him at 6 and I put him up at 4 now because I feel like the batting average feels like more of a secure thing now that we've seen that he can hit 260 something and it's not going to be a buck 90 like some people might have thought coming into the year. That's given me a little bit more security. I think generally speaking, you can't really go wrong in this range. Whether you go with Ellie or you go Gunnar Henderson, you go Jose Ramirez, you go maybe even Mookie Betts. Like the first round is maybe deeper than I can remember it being in quite a while. But I feel like Ellie does separate a little bit because of those stolen bases. And I feel like especially if you are playing in a points league, which is obviously different, you don't have to worry like we do in a roto sense about that surplus of stolen bases. You know, once he gets to 60 steals, how much are steals 61 through 80 really going to help you type of thing. If you're playing in a points league or a head-to-head league, I think he's solidly here. And I think in a roto sense, you could maybe mix and match a little bit. But, you know, there's a chance that by the time we get to draft season, he has kind of entered into that top four. And it's not just a top three. I don't know. Maybe if he ends hot and we see him go 30-70 and bat 270, maybe he should be in that conversation.
Yeah, he's a real polarizing guy. I cannot see myself having any of him next year. You know, there's a 80 to 100 stolen base upside with him, but there's also a 200 batting average downside. I don't see 270 in the cards with the batting profile, even if his BABIP goes nuts. And taking a guy in the top five of the draft that could tank your batting average is a risky, risky thing. I mean, there's a reason Kyle Schwarber was going in the sixth or seventh round. Guy's got 40 homers, 100 runs, 100 RBIs, but he batted 210. I know his batting average is up this year, but that batting average is precious. So it'll be interesting where he does fall next year and what he, you know, batting average sits in into this year.
So I've had a thought, something that is a change of opinion from what we typically hear about the first round or even things that I've been preaching, and I'm thinking I'm going to be doing it a little bit differently next season. And not just based on this year's sample, but just kind of thinking, and I'm probably going to think about this a little bit more, but the thought about you want to play it safe in the first round and you don't want to lose it has been a common theme. But I'm thinking, especially in really competitive leagues, you want to hit the home run. You want to smash. You want to get in the first round, not just a guy that like treads water and does the regular, you want that outlier, you know, plus season, because the differential between like a Judge, a Witt, and Ohtani, who are earning 50 plus fantasy dollars, like in a standard 5x5 roto, over like, you know, the end of the first round person is earning like 30. Okay. So I know there's like a, you know, math formula. It's not just like straight linear like that. It's not that he's earning double them. And you know, based on the, you know, number of players and everything, but I don't know. That's just something that popped into my head right now. I want the home run, you know, I mean, and a lot of these guys are that a lot of times they seem like they are that, you know, the beginning of the year. And so I don't know, just maybe a thought of maybe perhaps a bit of different approach. I don't know what you guys think of that.
Yeah, I like it. I feel like generally speaking, we feel like what you said initially, we have to just kind of play it safe in the first round, and then you'll hit your home runs in the fourth and the seventh and the 15th, and you'll get these little wins here and there. But hitting that big home run early on is definitely huge. And I feel like, you know, part of this discussion could be KDS. I feel like that's maybe where I would want to say, I'm going to set it in the top four picks. And then I know I'm getting one of Ohtani, I'm getting Judge, I'm getting Witt, or I'm getting Ellie. And then if that doesn't work out, then like we said earlier, the first round is just so deep. Even if I have to get two guys at the end of the first round, like I don't know if either of us even put Fernando Tatis. Oh, no, you have Tatis at 14. I had him just outside. Neither of us had Julio Rodriguez. So I could see an argument for going for that early first round home run, and also for kind of just going for a couple of these guys that are going to be pushed down because of injuries, because of bad seasons. If you can get a Julio Tucker 1-2 turn, which might happen in some leagues, like, or even a Julio Tatis or something like that, Carroll in that mix. Like, I feel like the back end could be really, really nice this year as well. But I don't think there's a wrong answer. Like, the first round is just so stupidly deep right now. I don't remember it being this deep in the last couple seasons.
Yeah, and you don't have even a Garrett Cole in there too, who's going to be pretty close to the turn, I would guess, as well. I would disagree with Vlad's sentiment, and especially in the main events. You look at the teams that win it year over year, they don't have that huge breakout. They have the guys that just produce. I remember a couple of years ago when Judge went nuts and hit 70 or 61 homers. He was on very few winning teams the year before with Ohtani. It would be interesting this year with Ohtani, how many of the top 20 main event teams have Ohtani. Because I don't believe you need to hit that home run in order to be successful. You need to be consistent. You need to have a lot of doubles. And that's why the Mookie Betts, the Juan Sotos, the Lindors are so appealing, even over the Ellie for me. I just think there's too much downside, because if you miss on your first round pick in an Ellie, it's much harder to come back than it is to, you know, only get $30 instead of $50 out of it.
By the way, you guys know they're going to be like, I don't know, a two dozen 2020 guys. Like, it's crazy. Like, everyone's a 2020 guy. It really, I mean, it's about to be Jackson Merrill. Willie Adames is creeping up there. Like, you know, Jackson Churio's about to hit it. Randy Rosarena, Gelov, Zito, wrong position. Nito. It's crazy. So, like, really, like, your prototypical, like, Ty France type, who, you know, I mean, it's probably a bad example, but you know what I mean? Like, the Matt Olson is a harder play. We've talked about this, Jason, but, like, you, like, almost have to steal bags because everyone's stealing bags.
Yeah, that's why I dropped Yordan Alvarez out of my first round. No running, and they're, you know, the underlying health concerns every year with him. I know he's been pretty healthy this year, but having a guy that is literally going to get one, maybe two stolen bases just puts you in a pretty big hole you have to come back out of.
What about Soto, though? Because Soto could also be one of those guys that gives you, like, five or seven steals. If he's not a Yankee, I'm wondering how far Soto falls. If he signs with the Mets or something, I don't know. Is there much of a difference between him and Yordan at that point?
Soto's that guy I think can still steal you 15 bags, and so there's a big unknown with him. Where Yordan's, there's no chance he's going to run. So Soto could sign that contract and want it. Hey, I earned this, so I'm going to show you I can do it. A lot of it depends where he goes, like you said. But yeah, there is some issues with that. You know, 10 steals is still different than one or two at the end of the day. But it is a really good point.
I will say that Yordan has one more steal than Soto right now,
which is six crazy.
Six versus five. I know. Yeah. Yordan almost hurt himself earlier stealing a base this year, too. I was going to lose my mind if that happened. Can you imagine if he had to miss time or significant time because of Yordan Alvarez stealing a base?
Yeah. Yeah. I was just thinking, you know, I just thought about how we were concerned that people discounted and pushed down Shohei Ohtani because we were afraid he wasn't going to steal bases. And I mean, holy crap. He's about to hit 50. Only Ellie has more bags than him.
That was a fail.
Oh, yeah. That was a huge fail.
Absolutely insane. All right. The other guys in this range, Gunnar Henderson, he's just incredible. I saw him in person. Jeff Biddle invited me to a Dodger game, some pretty sweet seats. Got to see him up front and personal. Did not hit a home run off of Bobby Miller like you would expect, but he just looks like kind of bigger than life. And there's phenomenal fantasy value on that roster. I mean, Santander's up there about to be on, you know, about to hit his 40th home run. I mean, this is what you do. You figure out the offenses and that they're going to smash and just load up on those guys. If, you know, a lot of us thought it was the Braves, it just didn't work out. It wasn't, you know, wasn't their year. That was a massive fail, but you have a bunch of Orioles on your team or Dodgers or, you know, Yankees, you're sitting pretty. By the way, there are two teams in the MLB quick trivia, two MLB teams that already have more runs scored now than they did all of last season. Do you know?
Kansas City feels like an easy one.
The other one's got to be the A's.
So it's not, but they're both very close. They're two teams that are like right around there or about to hit their last years, but it's the two teams that are first and second in baseball and runs. It's the Arizona Diamondbacks and the Yankees. Because the Yankees were like fifth worst in runs last year, which is crazy to think about.
They were rolling Cleveland out some bad offenses.
Jake Bowers.
Yeah.
Is Cleveland at the top there or close to the top? Because they were so bad last year.
Cleveland, they are scoring a lot of runs. They are, I don't know about through tonight's games, but they're actually 13th in runs scored. So they have 636 runs. And last season they scored, they were near the bottom. They were at 662. So they're almost there.
I guess I'm overestimating their offense based on being 20 games above 500. But yeah, offensively, it's not really done so much. It's more so been their pitching.
Well, what's crazy is the Cardinals, I'm already in football mode, the Diamondbacks. So through Wednesday's games, they had 763 runs, which is about 5.4 per game. And the Yankees are next closest, but they have almost 50 more than them. And so imagine that. I mean, I don't want to tell you how many more runs they have than the White Sox, but they're going to be lapping them pretty soon.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting Arizona to do this, especially with Corbin Carroll laying an egg for like 4.5 months, although he's the number one player over the last 30 days. So that's what happens. But yeah, they're first in runs, hits, OBP, second in OPS. They're just a juggernaut, even though their number one player was missing in action for most of the season.
Yeah. Well, real quick, Vlad, I did not realize this up until this week. Jose Ramirez is having an absolute monster of a season. And I think it's going really under the radar with what Shohei Ohtani's doing. But he's, what, 35-35 now? And it's not being talked about at all. I don't have him on any team, so I didn't really realize that. But he is carrying fantasy teams with what he's doing over there in Cleveland.
40-40 is a possibility.
Really is. And that doesn't happen every day.
No.
Yeah, and so I personally was I take an L there. He was going, 15, 16 overall? I think I had him ranked 19th and just was never a thought. I was biased by how that offense was doing last season, which were one of the lowest run producers in the league. And I just didn't, I was afraid of the counting categories. I didn't think he was going to get 200 plus runs in RBI again. He's already done that with 3.5 weeks to go in the season. He's an absolute beast. Like you mentioned, he's fourth in fantasy dollars. The only players that are doing better than him are Judge, Ohtani, and Witt.
Unbelievable. And at a weak position in third base, if he goes 40-40, maybe we should be talking about him as a top five pick, or at least very, very close to it.
Well, then there's Mookie Betts, who is now going to go into next season not having to play those positions, or not having to play shortstop, at least. Wasn't that great at it, but he's going to have all those positions of eligibility, and he's still Mookie Betts atop, the Dodgers lineup there.
So he's got 17 games at second, at least according to Fangraphs. So
he's not there yet. Okay.
So I don't know. He's playing right field, isn't he, right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know that he gets second, but even shortstop, outfield, Mookie, I mean, I'll take that. No problem.
Yeah. Safe as could be.
Any other guys you want to mention here in the round here, like Francisco Lindor sounds kind of like the new Freddie Freeman, like just was so disrespected in drafts. Like specifically when I saw him in a main event, he fell to like the end of the third or something like that. It was like pick 40. I'm like, okay, wait, now this is like, taking it a little bit too far. This is like the only guy that produces 25-25 every year. I understand the Mets were really bad last year. I was not buying in that offense this year, but he's just on another level. He's carrying like a whole city. The whole city's energized.
Yeah, Jason, you had him 12. I had him 13. I think that's where he belongs. And like you said, he went 30-30 last year, and then people wanted to discount him because the lineup, the batting average, I don't know what it was, but yeah, I didn't draft enough of him myself, so I was part of the problem. I was seeing him there at the 2-3 turn, and I would go with like a Vlad Guerrero, or I'd go with a pitcher, and I just didn't have enough interest, and I don't really know why. But next year, he's not getting out of the first round. Maybe he slips to 16, 17 in certain rooms because there are going to be people who have those same worries maybe, but he should be a first rounder pretty consistently.
Yeah, and the victory laps after 6 weeks of him starting off slow were unbearable. That drove me absolutely insane, and I didn't have any Lindor, so I just hate the victory lapping. The only concern with Lindor is the batting average fluctuates. He can be anywhere from 250 to 280. I like to start personally off with the batting average a little higher, but man, Lindor, the 30-30, just write it in. It's so valuable. A couple other guys for me. I hope Kyle Tucker's shin heals by next year, cause I'd love to have him again. Talk about a frustrating season, because he was really, really having a big year. Did you have any Tucker, Joe?
I do, yeah. I had him on a few teams, and I thought I'd struck gold like most people did. Like, I figured he'd be somebody that was in the 1-1 conversation. And the way it was trending, he might have been, honestly. If he didn't get hurt, if he just kept up doing what he was doing, there was a good chance he was going to go like 40-40 or close to it, great lineup, etc. But yeah, at this point, I think he's still a first-rounder, but this is crazy. Like hearing the other day that he in fact did have a fracture. It's like, oh, what do you know? There was more than a bruise going on there. Hey, eh? Well, who could have figured that? But hopefully he's healthy heading into next year. There's just one more guy that I think is worth mentioning a little bit. And which I think Jason and I deferred on this is Corbin Carroll. When I made this list a couple weeks ago, I didn't have Corbin Carroll as a first rounder. It was the only swap I made between that tweet I sent a few weeks ago and tonight. The order changed a little bit, but the only name that came out was Freddie Freeman. The one that went in was Corbin Carroll. Looking at Fangraphs' player rater, Corbin Carroll is the 28th ranked batter for the season. If you look at batters and pitchers combined, I believe he's 32nd. 32nd, yeah. So even after doing nothing for 4+ months, Corbin Carroll has a chance to finish as a second round value. He's already got 105 runs. I feel like he's going to sneak back into the first round a lot of the time. Do you guys think that's a possibility, or am I just overestimating what we've seen recently?
No, I mean, he's Corbin Carroll, rookie of the year from the previous season, who is happens to be on the offense. People look and see, oh, they score, you know, they scored the most runs in baseball, and he's a big reason why, especially if he finishes strong. I think it's absolutely possible.
Yeah, especially with what, if any information comes out about that shoulder, that was a question mark the first half of the year. If he comes out and said, I was playing with an injury, it's all better, or he could really fly up the boards as well. You know, I think Fernando Tatis at the back end of the first round, yes, please. The upside there is immense. And to answer your question from earlier about Jacob DeGrom, if he looks like the old Jacob DeGrom, I could see him going all the way up to 2 in some of the main event drafts.
Ahead of Witt and Judge, you think? Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
And that's if he came out the last 2-3 starts of the year and looked like the old DeGrom.
Looked like DeGrom. One last thing on Carroll. He has a chance to hit more home runs this year than he did last year. All he needs is 7 more. And he's hit 11 nuts in the last month. That would be, if somebody told you that like a month ago, you thought you'd breathalyze them. You'd think they were insane. But here we are.
Well, since the All-Star break, obviously Aaron Judge leads the league in home runs. He's got 17. Santander, Otani, Soto, Berger are all behind him. He's right there. He's got 14 home runs. He's in that glut of folks. Since the All-Star break, Corbin Carroll leads the majors in runs scored, and he's up there in RBI as well. By the way, do you guys, this is crazy. You know who's tied with Aaron Judge for the most ribbies since the All-Star break? And if Vladdy? I said Corbin Carroll, that's a clue.
Is it Corbin?
Teammate.
Ketel Marte? No, he's been out for too long.
It's not Jock, is it?
Eugenio Suarez.
Suarez, he's been a monster. Right. Yeah.
I don't have the actual player rating value since the All-Star break, but basically, like, outside, he's hitting 290. This guy is hitting 200 for years. Now he's hitting 300 since the All-Star break. And if you don't count steals, he's basically been a top four player since. I mean, it's insane.
Yeah.
He was a drop in a lot of leagues, like even in deeper leagues earlier in the season. He was doing nothing.
I bypassed him on one of my 15 team fabs and kicking myself. Can we get a little love for Jake Berger, by the way, who I was almost dropping in my 12s at the All-Star break, who has turned it around and looks like the guy we thought he was in draft season?
Sorry, Vlad, go ahead.
No, go.
I was just going to say, I was so down on him, like middle of the season. I was thinking, what are we doing here? He had a great year last year, but he's in Miami. The team is awful. I was recommending dropping him midseason. So that's a huge, huge midseason L for me on Berger. I was very down, very out.
One of the most awesome things were when the Marlins went to Coors for a 4-game series. And I just loaded up on all those guys. I wasn't even look at the names. Like, give me some Otto Lopez. Give me some Connor Norby. Like, you know, anywhere I could, even in 12 teamers where these guys aren't rostered, I'm like, I don't know, just feeling a big Miami week. And those guys exploded. Jake Berger was already hot. He hit a bunch of bombs there. Man, this is great. Let's win some leagues, guys. A few weeks left here. Let's finish this up strong. This will be fun. This is great because I think this has been a phenomenal conversation. I think, dude, you're a great podcast host and an amazing guest. So absolutely, we'll be having you on again. But before we go, I wanted to ask you your World Series pick. Is it different from the preseason, your two teams?
I'll be honest. I don't even remember what I picked in the preseason at this point. There's been so much stuff has happened at this point. But yeah, it's definitely not the same team, specifically in the American League. So I would go with Cleveland if they had even one more starter that I trusted. But I'm actually going with the Minnesota Twins here. Their offense has been great. It's been a top 7-10 offense in baseball. They have three starters that I feel very confident going into the playoffs with, in Lopez, Ober, and Ryan, and even David Festa at this point. Maybe he gets the fourth nod in the postseason. Maybe it's Woods Richardson, but he has been very impressive. Their bullpen at the back end there, Griffin Jacks has been incredible. Duran's been great. So I feel like they have kind of all the pieces covered there. And there's a lot of question marks throughout the American League. The Orioles, especially in the back end of the pen, have struggled. Their starters, also some question marks with Grayson Rodriguez getting hurt. And I'm not sure how much I trust their rotation. The Yankees, obviously, there's problems. Houston, I don't think they're the same monster they have been the last couple of years. So I think that Minnesota is going to be the dark horse that kind of comes away from the American League here. In the National League, I'm kind of going with the most complete team, and I think the Phillies are that team. They are stacked top to bottom in the order. You know, talk about a three-headed monster. They have a four-headed monster. Nola, Wheeler, Sanchez, and Suarez. That's amazing come postseason. The back end of their pen, there's like four or five potential closers. The lineup is great. I think it's going to be Philadelphia taking down the Twins, and I'll say six games.
Nice.
Love
it. You know, those Boyd boys are going to come after you talking bad about Matt Boyd on the Guardians.
I'm sorry, Nick. I'm sorry, Alex. I can't do it.
You know, I'm going to go off just vibes. First vibe is when the Dodgers get eliminated from the playoffs, everybody's going to celebrate other than Vlad.
I will cry.
But
Maddie Wood will cry even more. But yeah.
Yep. It's going to be a sad, sad day and a happy day at the same time. I am going Baltimore. I just like the vibes there. I like the way the team plays. I like the way they're playing for each other. I think they're going to figure it out. And I'm going to go San Diego because when the game's on the line, Jackson Merrill is going to hit a home run. It's just a fact. That guy is the most clutch hitter I think I've ever watched. And I know it's recency bias, but I've never seen anything like these ninth inning home runs that this guy's doing. So, and then I will say Baltimore in seven over San Diego.
Nice.
San Diego's a great pick. San Diego's pen, everything is so great. Musgrove has looked really good. Now they got Darvish back. So I could definitely see that happening.
Yes, we want Darvish back. Dodgers want Darvish back for more playoffs. Match our Kershaw. I'm sticking with my preseason pick because I also think my picks don't matter. It's the Dodgers and the Orioles. And for the record, it is my first year picking the Dodgers in two seasons. Didn't think they'd win it the last couple of years. But I will tell you why it doesn't matter is because I think this is so wide open. It's insane. I think because, you know, you can even see with like the team's records, how they're more compressed and closer to one another than ever before. You can make a strong case for anyone. And then it's October. It's magic. We have no idea what the hell is going to happen. And I'm just excited to see how it's going to play out. I think literally like any team can win except for the White Sox.
That's kind of the one fun part about the fantasy season dying down is we get to really focus in on postseason matchups. Like this is kind of the time of year when I first start looking at it really in September, like, you know, in middle of May doing fantasy stuff as much as we do. I don't care who's leading the Central, but this time of year, it does become a lot of fun to follow that. And it gives you something to, it gives you some fun as we kind of lose baseball for the season. You get a full month of playoff baseball and hopefully, hey, like what happened a couple of years ago in Arizona, maybe we get to see a World Series game down there.
Joe, incredible to have you on. Let us know everything. Let the people at FTN know everything that you're working on, you're doing, where they can find you.
Guys, I really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun. You guys are fantastic together. Jason, you've been a great addition to this podcast this year, and it's been really great to follow along and listen to you guys every week. I do way too much stuff. It's all over Twitter, at JoeOrico99. I host the Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast, and it's recently become myself and our friend Casey Bubba, who are hosts of that Wednesdays and Fridays. We switch off with Chris Welsh on the Mondays. But yeah, a lot of stuff at Fantasy Pros. A lot of stuff behind the scenes there, producing podcasts and stuff. We just did a show with Justin Steele, actually. I know football season has started, but he joined us for a mock draft. So that was a lot of fun. Got to produce that show. So that's been a lot of fun. And that's pretty much most of what I do is at Fantasy Pros. I also host my own daily podcast, which just feels like a side quest at this point, just talking baseball for half an hour a day. I don't bring on as many guests as I used to just because I'm too busy, but definitely going to start ramping that up again. 90 Feet From Home, Fantasy Baseball, but really just go check out the Twitter. It all gets shared out there. Way oversaturated at this point.
Joe, that was an absolute blast, my man. You know, you snapped me right back into baseball from watching that football game. So really appreciate it. Appreciate all the work you've been doing. You're one of the harder working guys out there, man. And kudos to you for growing your name, growing your biz. And I look forward to having you on again because that was an absolute blast.
Oh, I really appreciate it. I'm going to have both you guys on this offseason for sure.
By the way, I cannot believe I've known you all these years and I just never knew, I guess I never knew how to pronounce your name. So another player name I butchered. So you said it's Orico. I always thought it was Orico. So thank you for correcting me, and I'll say it correctly in the future.
It's not a Smith or a Williams or a name you'd come across every day. So I don't mind. Although there is another Joe Orico in the fantasy space. I don't know if you guys have seen that. There's a football guy who also does work at Fantasy Pros. So that's not confusing at all internally. But yeah, there's another Joe Orico of all the names that you'd find in one niche industry. You finding two of us, which is kind of crazy. But yeah, however you pronounce it, it doesn't really matter to me all that much.
Well, you are the 101 pick of the Joe Orico's and possibly maybe even the fantasy industry. So appreciate you coming on, brother. You can find him at Joe Orico, O-R-R-I-C-O 99. For Joe, for my co-host Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.